Welcome back, folks. A while back, I decided that it was really important that we sit down and talk to the movers and shakers on the North Shore because of the role that they play in our regional economy here. There's a lot going on in the North Shore for a lot of great reasons, and it's important to recognize that their contribution on so many different fronts is critical to the success of New Orleans itself, and obviously the metropolitan region. And together, we will move from a third-tier region to a second-tier region, hopefully based on the successes that we all enjoy in the future. A lot of folks have said, you know, that as when we started this and asked me why, I said, well, because it's simple. A lot of what they do impacts what happens on the South Shore and vice versa, and I think information is power. The more that we know about what's going on each side of the lake, the better off we are. And today's no different. We bring Dr. Will Wainwright, who's the president of Southeastern Louisiana University, and he's a former board member of the St. Tammany Chamber of Commerce as well. Doc, welcome to the show.
Welcome, and thank you so much for the way you positioned that impact statement. It is true. This regional approach for our overall success has never been more important.
No doubt, and obviously the university systems individually, collectively, at large, play a huge role in that as well. Briefly, if you would give us kind of a state of the state of Southeastern.
Yeah, absolutely. We're on, you know, celebrating our 100-year centennial. And if you really want to know the impact of our university, think about the fact that in 100 years, we've awarded 98,000 degrees, leading to the strength of family, strength of community, strength of economy throughout the North Shore and Southeast Louisiana. And we couldn't be more excited about how our mission has really been fulfilled over the past century.
What has, you know, education, a lot of challenges for you? What do you think is one of the most important issues or challenges that higher ed is facing today?
I would say it's the value proposition, ensuring that as institutions that we understand families, we understand the markets that we serve, that we're relevant to those markets, and that we ensure that our graduates are successful upon completion. Looking at some recent data through our alumni database, out of our 82,000 living alumni, just over 62,000 live in the state of Louisiana. We are extremely proud of that. And as you talk about the North Shore, and you look at just the impact of St. Tammany Parish on our university, 33% more students from St. Tammany Parish attend Southeastern than LSU. Not many people may be aware of that. And certainly, by and away, the number one parish we're seeing incoming Southeastern students. And so we're very proud of that. And it's important that we continue these deep connections with our partners on the North Shore, deep connections that we have with St. Tammany Parish Health System, with our St. Tammany Parish School System, just as one example, as we look at everything from college preparatory dual enrollment, which St. Tammany leads in college dual enrollment, not only in the state, but in the highest percentage of enrollment with our university, but also to the intensive healthcare projects that we have taking place as we transition students from high school into the healthcare sector. And, you know, having that partnership with the St. Tammany School System and St. Tammany Health System really makes that possible and provides successful outcomes for our students.
Doc, if you would, just for a moment, for the benefit of the listening audience, if you would describe dual enrollment, how that operates, and why it's so important.
Absolutely. Dual enrollment is incredibly important. If you look at the Louisiana Department of Education and the Louisiana Board of Regents long-term strategic plans, it has everything to do with ensuring that our students are leaving high school prepared for multiple paths, whether it's direct employment within industry and high-demand, high-wage occupations, or it's continued paths into apprenticeship, into community and technical colleges, into the university. all of that decision making and that preparation takes place not only in high school. Actually, research shows that as late as the junior high grades, we're seeing decisions being made in particular sectors of education and employment. So dual enrollment is critical, ensuring that our high school graduates are prepared. And we're very proud to boast one of the highest dual enrollment numbers in higher ed. And primarily that's because of parishes like St. Tammany Parish that are deeply engaged in this work, and the school board has invested as well as the district in ensuring that this is top priority to lead to student success.
You guys are always looking at your student population, what they're thinking about, what is top of mind issue for them. Over the last 10 years, what do you see, and what is kind of, and has anything changed significantly?
Yeah, great question. We've had significant change in how we as an institution and how students and faculty adapt to rapidly evolving technologies. For example, this coming August, we're going to officially roll out our AI strategy for the university, which is laser focused on providing support not only for, you know, faculty operational efficiencies, but also support for students. And one of the things I'm really excited about is some preliminary work where we've had direct engagement with business and industry to ask them, what does an AI-ready graduate look like in your sector? And they have been deeply engaged in that work. So we're really excited about what's to come. But I would say in the last 10 years, just the continued evolution of technology, and then you had, of course, the bolstering of that through the COVID pandemic. And so I would say we're definitely on the other side of that, much stronger when it comes to how we reach, how we connect, how we conduct business as an institution. And so I would say the technology aspect has been the most dynamic change.
Let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about economic impact, not only on the North Shore, but in particular St. Tammany Parish.
Absolutely. And if you look, our recent Lightcast study for the university showed our overall impact on the North Shore parishes sits at about $1 billion, supporting 15,000 jobs in total. And a significant percentage of that, 20 to 25%, is specific to St. Tammany Parish. And our university supplies the majority of teachers and nurses to the parish. So when you look at the billion-dollar impact and what does that translate to any parishes throughout the North Shore, that's where the role of our mission is vital in ensuring that we are true to that mission in preparing business leaders, educators, healthcare heroes for the future. And then when you do that and you're successful and you talk about economic impact, then you see industry partners like CLECO step up. CLECO just recently supported Southeastern St. Tammany Parish Public Schools and St. Tammany Health System by supporting a grant to allow us to really spur summer healthcare academies. And I'm so proud of our CEO of St. Tammany Health System, Joan Kaufman, and our superintendent, Frank Javia, for them and their teams who were able to really build that curriculum to ensure it was robust and that we make it take full advantage of summer opportunities to continue to build these pathways that will in turn strengthen our economy.
And I'm not sure if this is the right term, but it's amazing to me the nexus between a regional university and I don't know if that's an appropriate description, but the local economy, especially in teaching and nursing. Two of the most difficult programs y'all probably have at Southeastern, right? Competency tests that have to be passed and everything else. And, you know, and how much y'all are supplying of human capital to both of those systems.
No, great point. You know, nexus is a great term. I would even suggest ecosystem and the relationships between all entities that support those professions are critical. I'll give you an example. One thing we're piloting for the state of Louisiana, specific to promoting education and more educators, is at one time in your senior year as an education major, you would have one semester of practicum where you would report 40 hours a week to a local school district to secure your necessary competencies, as you mentioned, and your ultimate success to become an educator. And that curriculum has since changed to 1 full year. So, you know, think about 1 full year of practicum where you're unable to work. And so we are piloting a program where we're working with school districts that during that senior year of practicum, students will actually be paid a stipend, but they'll also receive 1 year of credit toward their retirement as a teacher in education in the state of Louisiana. And so we're very proud of that, but it's going to take those different ways of approaching the evolution of curriculum and needs of our districts to ensure that not only our students are successful, but we're showing and demonstrating why being an educator is so important. And post-COVID, it was important for us to reimagine and reintroduce healthcare professions and education professions to so many young people who were making some very critical decisions after they had just experienced some significant impact to both sectors.
Education degrees were down for a pretty good period of time. Has there been a resurgence?
Yeah, so I can speak for Southeastern, but to your point, across the nation, yes, there's been a decline. We're holding steady. We're seeing some slight increases that we're proud of. And beyond the College of Education, if you look within our College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences, that's where you have additional programs of study, you know, for English, math, social studies, all of the other areas of specialty, but also alternative teacher certification is important. And our ability to work closely with our school districts for those individuals wanting to get into the teaching profession who may have already been working in business and industry, it's vitally important that we grow those paths to education, and we're doing that as well. And that's one of the reasons through our partnerships that we're starting to see increases in student interest in education.
Now, you mentioned nursing earlier, and I think you guys have a special partnership with St. Tammany Health System. Kind of the same experience in the education world. I think we had similar experiences with nursing, right?
Yes, absolutely. The program that we have in St. Tammany with St. Tammany Health System launched 2 years ago. It's an effort to address the critical need for nurses in St. Tammany Parish. And so our School of Nursing partnered. We established an accelerated Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree program, and it's specifically tailored for St. Tammany residents. It's a North Shore-based program. It's housed in two places, but it's primarily at what we opened is the St. Tammany Academic Center through the gracious support of St. Tammany Health System. So we're located near the health system's flagship in St. Tammany Parish Hospital. And so we provide this program to students who are non-nursing majors or have non-nursing bachelor's degrees. And this allows them to take their non-nursing bachelor's degree and in an 18-month program achieve their Bachelor of Science in Nursing. It's a hands-on, very hands-on. You mentioned competency-based earlier, extremely hands-on competency-based degree that prepares them for the National Council Licensure Exam. So we already had several graduates of this program already, and we're excited and look forward to more benefiting from that program.
I've heard some great things about the program. I really like the kind of, and I wasn't aware of the education program, but I really like this out-of-box thinking, because these are critical occupations that we have historic shortages in. And It's going to take that out-of-box thinking to reestablish ourselves in these very important occupations.
One of the incredible momentums we have taking place now is when we establish, a best practice or a pilot that demonstrates success and excellence, we're able to work through our Chambers of Commerce, through GNOE, through their GNOU program, and we bring that to scale. So what's working very well for St. Tammany Health System right now through the project I just discussed, we'll be able to scale that with all of our partners throughout the North Shore, Ochsner, Slidell Memorial, Lakeview, North Oaks Health System, Our Lady of the Angels in Bogalusa. And so once we achieve that success through the leadership and vision of one of our partners, all of our partners are holistically focused on benefiting from that and advancing the profession.
You got a question here on the text line. It says, why does the doctor keep saying universities? Are these schools no longer technical colleges? If you could describe the difference.
Well, I think you know me well. I spent the majority of my career as a leader of community and technical college. And so
absolutely.
So I am a huge advocate for community and technical colleges. You have one of the fastest growing colleges in St. Tammany Parish and North Shore Technical Community College. So I really appreciate the question, because there's a place and space for all of our citizens, whether it is a two-year community and technical college, university, apprenticeship, military, and that's really what we are all laser focused on. I work very closely with the community college. So you think about this, you've got a welder or a machinist that graduates from a technical college. They're very successful. In 3 to 5 years, they're up for a leadership opportunity through our programs at the university and occupational health and safety, the only one in the state of Louisiana, and other programs in industrial technology. We can bridge that graduate to our university, prepare them for leadership and management for their continuum of learning and success in industry. So I really appreciate that text and helping us articulate that, the importance of our two-year system as well as our four-year system.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think a lot of times we don't think about that hand-in-glove kind of relationship as much in past history. And I think more and more I've been hearing about that, right, a closer nexus between that four-year university and that technical school, because there's so many different variations and specialties now that require both.
Without a doubt. And really the glue that holds us all together is ensuring that we're listening to the voice of industry. And when you have partners like St. Tammany Chamber, when you have partners like GNO Inc., that makes sure that we're all being educated and that we're responsive to the needs of our regional economy.
Dr. Will Wainwright, president of Southeastern Louisiana University, thank you so much for joining us today. Love the conversation. Love the things that you guys are doing over there on the North Shore. Keep up the great work. Congratulations on all of the successes that y'all have had. And have a great weekend, a great 4th of July holiday.
Thank you, Newell. Appreciate your focus on our future. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We'll be right back. Just a reminder, folks, nothing worse than losing power, especially during summertime and hurricane season. That's why WWL teamed up with Craig's Electrical and Generator to offer you the chance to win a portable generator. We're talking about a Generac GP 6500 portable generator, total value about $1,000. Go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win backup power from Craig's Electrical and Generators, because when the power goes off, Craig comes on, and WWL, Louisiana's official emergency management station. Folks, welcome back. We are joined by Crystal James, Program Manager with Common Ground USA. They are about to start a new program that's going to be a one-year-long cohort. Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about this initiative.
Sure. First, a little bit about Common Ground USA. We are the United States extension of Search for Common Ground, one of the oldest international peace building organizations. And we started our United States installment, Newell, in 2017. Previously, we had done no work in the United States because our work requires, or we work in areas that have political violence. And so we work to turn that conflict into a path forward in peace, or hence finding common ground. And so we've done work in Rwanda, lots of work in the Middle East, any place that has the threat or has actual political violence. Well, the indicators in this country started to change around 2016. I think we all feel it. More incidents of politically motivated violence, as we just saw with the two representatives in Minnesota most recently. But that's what caused us to bring our peace building work home and domestic, is that impetus. I manage the collective memory portfolio for Common Ground USA, where we had our first installment of the Collective Memory Project here in New Orleans in 2024. And we did a program called Reconstructing Reconstruction, where we convened a cohort much like the one we're going to do now. And they studied the Reconstruction era of New Orleans, who was leading, what was happening, and produced four memorializations there. This time, because it was successful, we are starting a new cohort, and our collective memory focus is three areas in the greater New Orleans region. One is the River Parishes, two is the New Orleans East, and three is the 6th and 7th Wards. We're going to look at demographic shifts, housing patterns, criminal justice and education outcomes, cultural institutions, and the histories of those regions, and then the cohort will decide what is it they want to memorialize. Not only that, but what can the past indicate in solving some of the challenges in those areas moving forward.
Now, the applications are open, but I think the deadline is a close of business today, right, folks?
Actually,
that may be interested. Go ahead.
I'm glad you said that. We have had amazing response, but we are still having more amazing response. So we've extended it through Thursday, July 3rd, Newell. You can apply through Thursday, July 3rd.
And how would they go about putting in an application or expressing a desire to participate in the cohort?
Absolutely. You can email me, and I'll say the email address a few times, KJAMES, I'm K James, at S as in search, F as in four, C as in common, G as in ground, .org. That's K James at sfcg.org. I'll shoot you the link to our Google form where you can fill out your interest form, and we'll be contacting you.
How many folks are y'all looking to have in the cohort?
Absolutely. We are looking for 15 to 20 community members, and we're looking for people with, it's a 12-month commitment. We're going to begin in late June and go through May of 2026. And the commitment involves a monthly 2 to 3 hour in-person experience. Some will be working sessions. Some will be looking at history in these regions. We also will have a 2-day in-person kickoff in July. And like I said, it's a year-long commitment with any expenses provided, meals provided. We try to make the experience where we honor people's time and work. And in addition to looking at that history, they'll also learn great skills for leading across difference and how to build peace and how to be that kind of agent in your own community as well. So we're looking for people that want to learn new skills as leaders to navigate across differences, people that are able to engage respectfully with people who may be different from you, and a commitment to actively contribute to the cohort for the year.
Crystal, typically, where would y'all meet? Is it different places each month or no?
Good question. Last time we met in one place every month. Because we're studying three regions this time, we'll be in one of those three regions every month, but we'll have different locations around that area. So what's maybe in the River Parishes, again, at in the East, and then perhaps also in the 6th and 7th Wards. And then some will be where Common Ground USA offices. We office at Propeller New Orleans, which is a co-working space on Broad in Washington, and we'll have some of our gatherings there as well.
Yes. What if you had to say of the last cohort that you did, was there something that surprised you? That was there something that that went on that, was kind of, caught your attention? Very interesting.
Yeah.
About observations that people are making.
Sure. The first thing I want to say about the last cohort was that it was an amazing group of people. What I will also say is that a lot of them were aligned ideologically. We had somewhat of a cohort of similar people, and we are really looking to reach beyond that with this cohort. We really want everyone's perspective on New Orleans, on these regions. And when I say diversity, I don't want you to just think about gender and age and race, but we want ideological diversity, people who have different thoughts about how we can move forward and what's going on in this country today, what our narratives are. So that's one intention of this second cohort. But one thing that surprised me about the last was we proposed a street name change, the group did. And we talked about community buy-in, how important it is to make sure that you don't land in a community and decide you're going to bring a program or decide you're going to do something. You work with them and gain their approval. Well, we had one group that just knew that a couple neighborhood associations would be on board. So they had already proceed for the application to change the street name and went and met with this neighborhood association. It's pretty powerful in New Orleans. And they said, wait a minute, you haven't come to us to talk to us about this. And you need to go back and regroup and reapproach. And I think that's a great lesson that group really learned about how important community buy-in really is. Because these cohort members will not just decide what we're going to remember. They're going to do the work to either apply for the historical marker, erect a monument. I didn't tell you what the four memorializations that we accomplished last time were. The first one is a historical marker in honor of Dorothy Mae Taylor's work. In addition to whatever, I think a lot of people know that she integrated social aid and pleasure clubs or Mardi Gras crews in New Orleans, but she also was the first Black woman state representative in Louisiana. So there's a marker in front of her home church at Mount Zion, United Methodist Church on Louisiana, I believe. And then there's a second marker honoring the Claiborne Business Corridor in Treme that was destroyed by the construction of I-10. So it's a marker to that historic business corridor and a list of all the businesses that were flourishing there at the time. And that's right under the Claiborne Bridge at St. Bernard and Claiborne. And the third one was a mural of the 1868 Constitutional Convention, the one that was during Reconstruction that elected Oscar Dunn. And that's on the wall of the Autocrat Club in New Orleans. And then the fourth thing, it was restore a park honoring many of the leaders during Reconstruction and pre-civil rights named A.P. Turo Park. Unfortunately, when they dedicated the park, it was 2 weeks later that it was vandalized, and they didn't have the funds to restore it, and they made the decision to do that. But they had to pivot from that street name change, and I think that was a great lesson.
Absolutely. Just a reminder, if you have an interest in participating in this cohort, the deadline has now been extended to July 3rd. You can email Crystal James at kjames, J-A-M-E-S, at sfcg.org for more information. It is a one-year commitment, and you will be meeting monthly. For sure, at a minimum. So think about involving yourself with Common Ground USA. And Crystal, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this information. And best of luck with your next cohort.
Well, listen, I sure appreciate you having me. And thank you all for listening. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you. That's Crystal James, Program Manager, Common Ground USA. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, love to hear from you, 504-260-1870. Just a reminder, if you love football, don't miss a special broadcast live from the Manning Passing Academy today. Join Mike Dettillier and Steve Geller for Sports Talk Live from Thibodeau at Nicholls State University. They'll bring you the 50-yard line. They'll be at the 50-yard line at the premier football camp in America with the first family of football, Archie, Peyton, Eli, and Cooper. This amazing camp helps players reach their full potential on and off the field by teaching the fundamentals of football for key offensive positions, running back, tight end, wide receiver, and, of course, quarterback. And this year, it will feature elite quarterbacks Archie Manning and Garrett Nussmeier and a whole lot more. So join them for a special edition of Sports Talk. They'll be broadcasting live from the Manning Passing Academy from 4 to 8 p.m. Something new, something interesting. It'll be exciting. Brought to you by the good folks at Thibodeau Regional Health System and WWL. You know, it's been really interesting what's been actually going on with the damage assessment of the strike ordered by President Trump in Iran. This drama continues almost daily as to how much battle damage was done. There's a number of intelligence agencies, obviously folks that are leaking information, putting this country at risk, putting a lot of folks at risk for the sake of politics. Sometimes I just think we've lost our minds. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. It's as if you know, they're trying to make a point as it relates to the president and the words that he uses, you know, and trying to diminish that and talking about, you know, that the president speaks in a way that just he can't back up with the intelligence. We don't take a breath. We don't wait. I don't know what the damage is. I don't think anybody really knows until we have credible sources that go eyes on over there. We all know what they were hoping and attempting to achieve. Does anybody believe that we've not achieved some of that? To what extent? Don't necessarily know at this point in time. Is it a disruption? Yes. Is it going to be a challenge for them to reestablish, redevelop those facilities? Yes. Will it diminish their intent to be involved in the development of nuclear weapons? I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows. I never really thought that was going to be an outcome of this, right? I think it's going to require more of the allies working either with or against Iran in the future and continuing to send the message that they're not going to have nuclear weapons. And at some point in time, it may mean that there may be more bombings by both Israel, the United States, and maybe other allies as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But the drama that's going on right now for political purposes is really uncalled for. There's no guarantees in a battle, in a war. There are no guarantees in intelligence. Intelligence are educated guesses to a certain extent, not always, but it's like a puzzle. You're putting pieces together. It just doesn't, there's no smoking gun, so to speak, right? Until you're able to validate, go eyes on. Who do we have? Chuck, you're up. Well, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, it's kind of an off the wall subject, but it just hit me the other day and I just said, I got to throw this out at the radio station soon. I'm an accountant by trade, and so I look at a lot of people's financial statements. And I was going down, I have this one client that has a lot of rental properties, and some of them big complexes. And I was going down the list of expenses. You know, we like to analyze all the different income and expenses and talk to the client about it. And I noticed a number jumped out at me, and it was utilities. And it was exceptionally high. And I dug down deeper into it. And this particular client's in Jefferson Parish, And the Jefferson Parish water bill was just, it just startled me how high it was. And I started thinking to myself, when has water, and I guess the surge services associated with it, gotten so expensive? I don't know if other people or if you've noticed that, or if it's something just seems like it's taken this major shift towards the cost of water and disposal of it.
Well, that was done intentionally, actually, as a result of a lot of modifications and improvements in upkeep to an aging system. They raise the fees to be able to support, I think, a bond issue that they're going to float in order to make sure that they're able to keep the infrastructure up at this point in time. I think the aged infrastructure was pushing, I want to say, 60 years. And they felt like there was a need. It was very controversial. It was proposed by Cynthia Lee Shang. The council ultimately approved it, and the rates went up. And that's what they're hoping to finance, is to make sure that they don't end up like the city of New Orleans with an aged infrastructure that they got so far behind the eight ball that it's now billions upon billions of dollars to remediate that. Lessons learned. You get what you pay for. And I think that's what you're seeing reflected in the water bill. Okay. Seems as though Chuck dropped off, but yeah, I mean, you know, it is a cost, and when you have aging infrastructure, I know in my neighborhood I've seen the trucks that are doing certain testing on the pipes, lining on the pipes. There's actually been a lot of work as I make my way up around Jefferson Parish, where these I guess transfer points and stuff, they've been modifying that and improving that to improve the flow, you know, checking for leaks in the system, replacing destroyed pipes. I've seen a lot of that going on, you know, so that was an intentional move by the administration in order to make sure that this system is up to snuff. It's hard to argue with it. It's painful. I get it. You know, and it's tough, but I don't know about you, but when I turn the water on, I want it on, and when I flush the toilet, I want it to go where it's supposed to go, for sure. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.